All right. Been a couple of weeks now since we've looked at this, so let's go ahead and start in verse 2. We'll just read 2 through 4 real quickly. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. And then if you lack wisdom, then ask of God. So it's interesting how I didn't notice this until this evening, but he repeats his vocabulary word from one clause into the next. So let me read that again and see how this works. So count it all joy when you fall into manifold trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience, but let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. And there's lacking, and then if any of you lacks. So he just keeps repeating the same vocabulary word from the previous verse, with the exception in verse 2 of the word trials. That's a slightly different word than the word testing, but very close to the same meaning. So what he's doing is he's taking a thought, and then he's taking that thought, and he's moving into the next verse, and then into the next verse, and then into the next verse, and making his logical conclusion, which he's going to come to in verse 4. So basically what we see in verse 2 is that whenever we fall into a various trial, remember what the word various meant? Had to do with colors. Okay, dappled, or a color that was just very difficult to pick up because it just kind of transitioned. In other words, all different kinds, all different shades. So doesn't matter what kind of a trial it is. So what kind of trials is he talking about here? Remember the Greek word? It's the same Greek word that is used for
testing.
Well, it's testing, yeah, but it's also the same Greek word that he's going to use in verse 13. Let no one say when he is tempted that he is tempted of God. But you remember, we saw at the time that this was something that we fall into. In other words, we have no control over it whatsoever. How about temptation? Do we ever really fall into temptation? Or do we kind of put ourselves into that situation? See, all temptation comes as a result of what?
Our own lusts.
Okay, so now you fall into the enticement. I'm not going to say you don't fall into the enticement. But when the temptation comes, you've got some control at that point, and you need to put it to death. You need to remove it right away. So, but there is a slight shade here, but when he says, let no one say, would you say we should rejoice when we fall into temptations? No. So those are not included here. That's why I say the only way I think we can leave that out is with the idea of falling into versus putting ourselves in a situation where we are allowing that to continue to grow. So, but when you fall into manifold trials, so let's just talk about the trials themselves. Is bereavement a trial? You lose someone you love? Yeah, that's a various trial. Financial loss, health problems, accidents, problems with friends and loved ones, circumstances and events, persecution, the trials and tribulations of persecution. There's lots of different kinds of trials. And how does God want us to meet them? What's the emotion ultimately that we end up with after we've gone through it? We may not have it immediately, but where do we have to end up?
Joy.
Okay. Now, and again, there's no way to misunderstand what he's saying here. We should have joy when we fall into manifold trials. You know, you can twist this verse any way you want to, and you can say, well, maybe not this, maybe not that. No, God is very clear here. He wants us to rejoice when we fall into trials. Now, there's a reason why, though, and that's why he says, knowing that. So, knowing that. If I know this, then how am I going to respond to my trials? With joy. If I don't know it, how am I going to respond to my trials? With bitterness or unhappiness. Let's face it. Does Jesus say in the parable of the sower that a large segment of those who are converted are going to be taken out by these trials and temptations and problems that come along? Yeah. Tribulations, persecutions, trials are going to cause people to fall away if you don't respond properly to the trial. Does God have the ability in this sin-cursed world, and we'll get into this a little more in the next verse, but does he have the ability in the sin-cursed world to exempt us from all the problems of life? No.
He could.
Well, okay, yes, he could, well, but let me rephrase that. Is it God's will that we should be exempted from these things in life?
No.
No. So we can't hope for that. And we can't hope that I'm just going to skate through life. Brian, did you have a point?
Well, I was just going to say, we see it, you know, as we live our lives, we talk about people being battle tested. You know, that applies to, like, ourselves, or you see teams, they go through difficulties, it makes them stronger. If you want to build muscle, you have to tear it down first, and it has to build back up, and then it becomes stronger.
Right.
So we just see this throughout life, and so spiritually it makes sense, right?
Yeah, and as I say, and we talked about this in the context of Philippians chapter 4, in nothing be continuously anxious. Is God forbidding the initial anxiety? Doesn't Paul say anxiety for all the churches? Doesn't Paul say, when I didn't find Titus, I was deeply concerned, and I left my opportunity in Troas? No, the initial, when you get that phone call in the middle of the night that something terrible has happened, there's going to be anxiety until you've done everything you can do, and then after that, what do you have to do?
Leave it up to God.
Yeah, leave it in God's hands, and if you trust God and it's in His hands, what comes?
Joy.
The peace of God and the joy. So we have this opportunity, but it's going to be a very difficult, steep learning curve. In other words, it's something that you can learn, and then you don't have any trials for 6 months or a year, and then guess what? You get to learn it all over again. Because when they come, you're just, whoa, what's this? And then, oh, okay, and now I'm ready to go with this. And so I have to have this knowledge, though, in verse 3, that this test is going to produce something. And is there much value to this patience or perseverance, depending on your translation? Is there any value to it? Well, yeah. He says, if I have that patience, and now we come into the verse where we want to talk about this evening, let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete or entire, lacking nothing. So James is very clear in verse 4 that patience brings what? Brings perfection. It brings, he uses three different synonyms here. Two are positive, one is negative. He says, you're going to be perfect, you're going to be complete, and we'll get into these vocabulary words here in just a minute. And what are you going to lack?
Nothing.
Nothing. And these words, it's interesting, they're superlatives. Every one of them is a superlative. The perfect means the absolute perfection, maturity, nothing lacking. And the word lacking means you have something you need to have in order to be able to do something. And if you're not lacking that, what do you have? Everything. So what's God saying? With patience, what will you have? Everything. If you can approach your trials with joy, then you are proving that you have reached. When you think about Job, doesn't that make perfect sense? When God wanted, when Satan wanted to sift Job, like he did Peter, when he wanted to, does he fear you for nothing? If you take away what he has, what will he do?
Curse you.
Curse you to your face. Well, was Satan right? No. And you think Job had some joy? I'm sure he had some recriminations. I mean, he didn't handle it perfectly, did he? But he did not sin or charge God foolishly in the initial part. And remember what God said at the end to his three friends, you have not spoken to me what is right, like my servant Job has. So he cracked, but he didn't break. And so Job proves the value, because what's Satan's first order of business? If he wants to try to sift us, what's his first order of business? Put us into a trial. Put us into a situation where he doesn't think we can handle it. You scratching or raising your hand? Okay, you did both. So I thought, well, go ahead. When you do this and then you do this, the guy kind of goes, okay.
I didn't make multi on the way up. I scratched.
Anyway, That's all right.
Yeah, you mentioned Job, but you just start thinking of all the examples in the scriptures. Paul, I mean, how can Paul take a beating, get stoned, and come out of that with joy? But you're helping us to understand that it's totally against what the world thinks. Doom and gloom, you know, you can't take a negative, make a positive. And Christians are probably the only people that really understand this concept of what
right.
You're talking about.
No, that's a good point. Because what do you have to have in order to think like the apostles did? They considered it joy that they could suffer
for
the cause of Christ. What do you have to believe that? Oops. I think I just gave you the answer. You have to have faith. And what do we need in order to get to heaven? Faith. But what kind of faith? A working faith, a faith that will move us so that we can count it all joy. And if we can't count it all joy, then we do have lacks. We are not perfect. We are not complete. And we lack this wisdom. And what does God say to do? I've given you information. Sometimes we're so deeply in the darkness that when even when the light comes, what happens?
Curse it.
You still can't see it. You read a passage of Scripture that clearly blows up your thinking on something, but you can't let it go. Have you met people like that? See, I had somebody like that last Sunday. She just was not going to let go that God and Jesus were the same being. And I read her a verse, and she just wouldn't. She couldn't see it. It was just completely dark. Now, some of us can't see this verse. We read, count it all joy when you fall in a mountain of trials, and we say, that doesn't make any sense at all. Matter of fact, not only does it not make any sense, I don't like it. And I'm not going to do it. And you ever think like that? You know, turn the other cheek. I don't like that one. I'm not going to do that one. Well, wait a minute. Should we ask for wisdom? Okay, I got Charles and then Jeff.
Yeah, in reading the Old Testament, the story of David, what he was going through with Saul, I think that that applied this way.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
What he was going through.
Sure.
I mean, he's trying to do the will, and yet he was being persecuted the way that he was right there. But yet he had faith in God that he was going to overcome all of those things that this man was constantly behind him and trying to kill him.
Exactly.
So the Bible really helps us a whole lot, these Old Testament stories that
right.
we read about.
And that's exactly right. And we're going to see that when we get into James chapter 4. He's going to say, take the prophets as an example of what I'm talking about here, of the value of patience. And you've heard of the patience of Job, and you've seen the end of the Lord. In other words, at his most dire moment, when his friends are hammering on him and he's just crumbling, what was the Lord's plan? What was the Lord? What was the end of the Lord? That this would be a blessing to Job. Did it work out that way? It sure did. Jeff?
Well, and just to illustrate it with a real-time example, we got a question submitted to the website from someone who claims to be a Christian, that they were all torqued out of shape because on Easter Sunday, a group of quote-unquote Christians were killed in a series of bombings by radical Muslims in some foreign country.
Right.
And this quote-unquote Christian just could not understand why God would allow, these people to set these bombs off and destroy, quote-unquote, his people in the middle of this high holy day.
Right.
But in some way, that shows, to some degree, a lack of understanding of scriptures, B, a lack of, faith that yes, indeed, these things do have value, even though it doesn't seem that way. And it also kind of quickly illustrates as we see with Job, the tendency to, God could have stopped it. Why didn't he stop it? Right. Well, he must have been punishing him for, doing some wickedness. Why would God visit such a cruel death on them? All right, let's back up the bus.
Exactly. And I've got that in here. We're going to get to it on the next page, that in Ecclesiastes, does God say that you're going to see what should happen to the wicked happening to the righteous?
Yep.
What's happening to the righteous happening to the wicked? And you just have to factor that in. Prince and I have been going over this, over the book of Ecclesiastes, and we're in chapter 7, and I've just been hitting over and over again, when God made the decision to give people grace and mercy, he had to suspend certain things that we count on, which is fairness. And yet, do we see fairness in the world? No, you don't see fairness in the world. But if God's going to save this guy who's doing these terrible things today, what can't he do today? He can't stop him. He can't strike him dead. He can't intervene. He's got to allow these things to go on. And Ecclesiastes, just over and over again, is making that point that you can't count on God to change the way things are going because he has a bigger plan than we do. His plan is, in 2 Peter 3:8, is to save who? all men. He's long-suffering to all, not willing that any should perish. You mean this guy over here, this terrible rat like the Apostle Paul who's trying to destroy the church? You think God shouldn't want to destroy a man like that? Well, no, he wants to save him. And he did save him, much to the concern, I'm sure, of some Christians. Some Christians were probably shaking their heads thinking, man, this doesn't make any sense at all. Be like, I think, wasn't it Jeffrey Dahmer who became a member of the church? And, you know, you look at that and you just think to yourself, man, I can't wrap my mind around that. Some people could go to the prison and work with him. I would really struggle with that because it would be hard for me to deal with what he did. Now, could I do it? Oh, I probably could do it. But I'd have to be praying for this wisdom because it wouldn't be something that just, oh, I'd love to do that. It'd be something I'd have to work to do. Now, Ken, did you have your hand up earlier? I kind of ran right over you. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I was just thinking that, you know, as we've been naming a lot of good examples, and I think the bad examples were the children of Israel and their murmuring about it, almost anything.
Yeah, no, and that's the other side of this. And those are the people who fall. And what they do in the wilderness? They fell. So we've got to wrap our minds around this. You can't get away from it. It's just something you're going to have to deal with, one of the most practical things of life, and that is people are going to die, people are going to get sick, bad things are going to happen, accidents are going to happen, terrible things are going to occur, people you know are going to betray you or do things to you that you don't appreciate, and you can't get out of it. So you've got to get this factored into your mind, and that is these things do have an overriding purpose, and that is to create patience within us, to create this perseverance, this stick-to-itiveness, this I don't care what happens, I am not going to quit. I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to charge God foolishly. I'm not going to get involved in these things. And so that's where the joy comes in, because as you pass through each trial, you know, it's easy on the one side. You know, we've all done this. And we've all met people who do that. I know I could do that if I got in that situation. Well, what happens sometimes? You can't always do it. And so, you know, with Peter especially, I'm sure it must have broke his heart that he couldn't do what he said he could do. But then when he gets a second chance, when they're persecuting him and throwing him in prison and beating them, now how's he feel? Now I got this joy. And that's where the joy comes from. We didn't betray him this time. Or excuse me, we didn't leave him. We didn't forsake him this time. Because was Peter the only one? No, they all did it. They all did it. So knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. So now we get into verse 4. But let your patience have its perfect work. Now, as I start out in the notes, we know this is a command because it's in the imperative mode. And it has a very specific ending which tells me this is a command. And so the word let may not be quite strong enough. I think make might have been better, but make patience have its perfect work. It's a command. It's not a suggestion, not an exhortation. This is a command. You must make patience have its perfect work. So this is something that we are all commanded to do, and the command is in the word have. Right. Patience, of course, is a noun, so it doesn't have any action. So patience here must have. It must possess something. We must allow it to possess. How do we let patience do something?
Hold on to it.
Well, that's right. We have. It's our responsibility to keep it in its proper perspective. So as you see those two first words, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on the vocabulary, it's just the first ones, but the word echo means to hold, to have in the hand. So you possess this. You hold this in your hand. You keep this. This is your most precious possession. Make sure that patience is allowed to go on. Because what happens if you start out with patience and then, like Job did, you just get to a point where you say, you know, God's not being fair. Now what happened to that patience? Did he hold on to it? Well, it started shattering, it started shaking, and did God have a few choice words for Job at the end of the book? Was it all compliments and, oh, Job, you just did so well here? No, who is this who darkens counsel with words without knowledge? Job, the more you talk, the darker it gets. You have no clue what you're talking about. And you must make patience have. Patience has to have something come out of it. And what does it have to have? It has to have a perfect work. Now, what is that perfect work? Well, he just told us. Perfect work of patience is what happens when you go into a trial.
Joy.
you feel joy. Okay? No rocket science here. Really simple. If patience is having its perfect work, and the word perfect means brought to its end, absolutely and completely doing what it's supposed to do, if my heart is doing its perfect work, then what's it doing? It's beating without stopping. Okay, if it stops having its perfect work, what happens?
Probably die.
I die. So everything has to have its perfect work, and patience has a perfect work, and that is when you get into a trial, you feel the joy. Virgil?
The New American Standard Version spreads this out a little bit more. It says, instead of patience, it uses the word endurance, and let endurance have its perfect result, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing.
Okay, yeah. And that's saying exactly the same thing in slightly different words, because that's what the word work is a product. And what's a product? It's a result of an action. So if I do something and nothing results from it, it was a waste of time, right? Got to have a result, okay, if it's going to be perfect. So let patience possess something. Let it hold something. Let it hold fast to something. What? Having joy in your trial. Because the joy in the trial makes the patience, and the patience brings the joy. And if we don't have the joy, then we didn't have the patience. It didn't produce what it was supposed to produce, and therefore it, instead of becoming something that made us better and better, it's doing just the opposite. And that's the problem with trials, and that's why the devil uses them. Because, yeah, they can make me stronger and stronger and stronger. But what else can they do? Yeah, they can tear you apart. It's all in your perspective. It's all in the way you choose to look at this. And patience or endurance or perseverance or the ability to... It literally has the idea of abiding under, remaining under something, even if you could get out of it by lying or cheating or stealing or renouncing God or whatever, you're not going to do it. Because you're going to stay under that. And as you stay under it, it's going to produce patience. And as you're staying under it, that's where the joy comes from. And so, but it all comes down to faith, because if we didn't know we were supposed to feel joy, would we? I mean, it might still be helping us, but are we joyous? But this is a command here. So allow or let or make patience have its perfect work or result. So let's take a look at a couple other of these verses now, or vocabulary words. Right in the middle of page 14, towards the bottom, we have the Greek word for work, or it's business, employment, with which anyone is occupied, any product, anything accomplished by hand, art, industry, or mind. So tilled lands, tilled fields, farms. So whatever it produces, if you sow your seed and you till the ground and you weed it, but you don't get the water, what's the result? Well, you don't get anything. You don't have a result. And that can happen here. This can all get short-circuited. That's why we have to be so careful. We have to make patience have its perfect work. In other words, just like sowing seed, there's certain things that have to occur, and I have to make that patience. I have to force my thinking and my mind to gain this wisdom he's talking about in verse 5 by allowing myself to see it this way. This is what this is for. This is why God allows it to happen. There is a benefit here. So the work that's involved here is the product or the results that come as a result of it. And then at the bottom of page 14, we have the word perfect, which brought to its end, finished, complete, wanting nothing necessary to completeness, perfect, substantively that which is perfect, of man, full grown, adult, of full age, mature. Because we can't be perfect, right? Nothing. Can anything really be perfect in the strictest sense of the term in this sin-cursed world? Not really. But it has a specific idea, and that is it's not lacking anything. Brian?
Yeah, and that's why I've always found it interesting where it says that we are to be perfect as our Father in heaven is perfect, and it's this word, teleos, right?
Right.
So it's not saying sinless and so forth, but it's saying complete, like our Father in heaven in that sense.
That's right. And that's our goal. is to see things the way God sees them and to act the way God acts. I mean, whose image were we created in?
God's.
In the image of God. So, the second word maybe gives us a little better idea, and that is having reached its end, finished, complete, of victims, perfect, without spot or blemish, of animals, full grown, of persons, absolute, complete, accomplished, perfect in his or her kind, of prayers, vows, fulfilled, or accomplished. So it just means it's brought to its proper end. So the proper end of trials is joy. And what did Paul say? I have learned how to be what?
Content
in
all whatsoever state.
Yeah, in whatever state I'm in. I know how to abound. That's one you don't have to teach me. That one, I got that one down. I know how to be content when I'm abounding. What about the abased? That one, that's where I need my patience. That's where I need to understand the endurance. And it's a very pleasant thing to go through these things and come out on the other side and be able to look back on your life and say, I've already manifested this here, here, and here, and here. It's just it's a real pleasure to be able to look back on those moments in time where something terrible happened. We handled it well. We did what we were supposed to do. And there's just a sense of accomplishment, a sense of fulfillment, a sense of perfection there that, yes, I handled that one thing the way I should have. Virgil?
Usually, as we mature, especially in areas like this, our character will depict that as we go through, and there's problems that affect every day, the way we deal with them. And we see some people handle them very well. Other people, they don't do too good. But as time goes on, and the more of these problems we deal with, and especially when we deal with them correctly, then that is manifest in our character. And this is one of the reasons it's very important, especially for older people or people that, like elders in the church or even preachers and that they be very careful in what they do and the judgment that they make and what they're going to do about this or about that and not run off half-cocked, as we would take and say, but that it is going to reflect the wisdom of God.
Right.
And a continuance, so that if you do it this way today, and you do it right, then it should be that somebody could take and say, well, you'll do it tomorrow too, and do it right.
Right. Well, we're supposed to learn, but what does Hebrews 10 tell us at the end there? Do not cast away. You know, you've endured all of this, and now you're in danger of losing it all. So that's what he's telling the Hebrews there. In chapter 10, and we'll quote that in just a minute. Let's go ahead and turn to page 15. So let's be real clear here. My response to every trial should ultimately end in joy. Now, as I say, I don't think the Christian is supposed to have to feel that joy the minute he goes into it, because the minute you go into something, there's a lot of other emotions involved, because when you rip something up by the roots, there's going to be pain, there's going to be sorrow, there's going to be unhappiness, there's going to be a lot of things that you're going to have to synthesize and you're going to have to make fit together. But when it's all done, and the quicker this comes, the better, but when it's all said and done, you look back on it now and there's no bitterness, there's no anger, there's no frustration. I see the joy. I see the benefits of this. I don't like it. I don't like that it happened. Somebody's dead that shouldn't be dead, or something happened that shouldn't happen. I don't appreciate that. But the ultimate end, it's in God's hands. And so I'm going to put my joy here. I'm just going to leave it alone. I'm not going to get bitter. I'm not going to get angry. If we get bitter over a trial, and we every time we look back on it, we feel that same sense of bitterness, are we perfect? Are we complete? No. We're not manifesting the proper attitude. So James is really, I mean, this is very powerful, and he's using a lot of imperatives here, or a lot of commands. It's a command in verse 2, count it all joy. That's a command. And it's a command in verse 4, let or make patience have its perfect work. In other words, this is the result. You've got to feel this sense of accomplishment, this sense of exaltation. Paul dealt with it in Romans chapter 5. I think I've got it in here somewhere, so I won't get to it right now. We'll come back to it in a minute. But so the conjunction here, which is to the purpose, or for the purpose that. The purpose of letting patience have its perfect work is so that you can be perfect and entire or complete and lacking nothing. So now we move from patience to who? To how God sees me, how you should see me, and how I should see me if I respond like this. That in order that you may be perfect. And we repeat the same word. So the end result of counting all these trials like this is going to be that, first of all, the perfection that works, or excuse me, that the endurance has is now coming to reside within me. And then he uses another word, complete, which is that second definition toward the top of page 15. Complete in all its parts, in no part wanting or unsound, complete, entire, whole. And then in a totality with special emphasis on the entity as a whole. So what does this patience have the ability to do to me as a whole, as far as God sees me? This is the perfect man. This is the complete man. This is what I want as Christians. This is the goal where Christianity is going to lead us, is this endurance. And it's interesting, in 2 Peter 1, he does basically the same thing. Add to your faith virtue, to virtue knowledge, to knowledge self-control, and to self-control perseverance. Same word as here. It's got to be there. Because if these things are yours and abound, they make you to be not idle or unfruitful, and they bring you to the point of, again, being whole and perfect. And so if you want to have that, then this has to be the response. So something that seems so shocking when we first read it, count it all joy when you fall into manifold trials, becomes toward the end here the norm. This is perfection. This is completeness. This is not lacking anything. The last definition I like, because it says denotes completeness in extent or compass, and thus is a term of quantity rather than quality. Now, the first one, perfection, is the quality. This is the quantity. So not only am I quality-wise perfect, but quantity-wise, what do I have? Everything. Okay, I'm not lacking anything. So it's amazing to me that James could ascribe, it's kind of like 2 Peter 1, you take those seven things and you say to yourself, if I have these seven things, then if these things are in abound, they make you to be not idle, they will make you, they'll make your calling and election sure, if you do these things, you'll never stumble. And here he says, if you have this endurance, then you are perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Now, clearly, I mean, James started the book. Are we talking to just anybody here? Or are we talking to people who already believe in God and believe in Christ and who already have obeyed the gospel? I mean, obviously, there's some criteria here, because you're not going to be perfect and entire. But James is getting across here. We have this huge, vast area. There's two vast areas that we have to be concerned with. One is the trials. What does Jesus give us the other one in the Sermon on the or Parable of the Sower? Cares of the world, desires for other things, deceitfulness of riches, choke the word and you become unfruitful. Now, that's a huge area we have to be concerned with. But there's another huge area we have to be concerned with. And that's why I was saying a few months ago that different generations have to focus on different aspects of this. There have been generations in the past, if you were raised under the time of the Depression, were you more concerned with trials or more concerned with wealth and how wealth could lead you away? Well, obviously, the wealth is not a factor in that particular generation. It's the trials. And so the Satan constantly trying, and as Jesus, or as the Ecclesiastes says, there's nothing new under the sun. Things just cycle. They cycle from prosperity to adversity. We've had how many years of prosperity now? What does it start? 60s? 50s? Pretty much had prosperity. If we drop into a depression, you think there'll be very many people jumping off skyscrapers like they did the first time? Yeah, they're going to be able to handle that. But we need to handle it. We need to be able to handle both. Fortunately for us, because we're Christians, we still manage to get into some serious trials, because when you're preaching the word, what usually happens? You'll get your head bit off a few times. And so you'll get an opportunity to feel some of these things. Okay, so let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect, quality, and complete, quantity, lacking nothing. Now, The perfection, I just got a few verses here I kind of wanted to look at on the middle of page 15. If you faint in the day of adversity, what's the problem? Your strength is small. Now that's God's assessment. That's in the proverb. Hebrews 10, we talked about earlier, you have need of patience or endurance, so that after you've done the will of God, you may receive the promise. For yet a little while, and he who is coming will come and will not tarry. Talking about Habakkuk and Babylon, this terrible thing's about to happen. Babylon's going to come in. What do they do to Jerusalem? They killed everyone. I think, what do we say? Maybe 12,000 people in the whole land of Israel went to Babylon. What happened to the rest of them? Well, most of them died. I mean, that would have been a very terrible day to have to witness, watching all those people die, having people put their eyes out. But my servant, verse 38, the just shall live by faith. If anyone shrinks back or draws back, my soul has no pleasure in him. We are not of those who draw back to perdition, but those who have faith or who believe to the saving of the soul. And then those two verses I talked about earlier in Ecclesiastes, I'm not going to read them again, but just the way life is. Good things happen to bad people, bad things happen to good people. And then that guy in Psalms who says, I just about slipped because I'm having all these problems and these wicked people aren't. And we need to have that, or we're not going to be perfect, we're not going to be entire, and we're going to be lacking. So we don't want to be lacking. All right, let's go ahead and turn to page 16. And you see the word lacking again. I mentioned earlier these are all superlatives. The word lapo, literally to leave behind, to forsake, and then to be left behind. And then basically to be inferior, to be destitute, to lack. Then the next definition, to not possess something which is necessary, to not have, to be in need of, to lack. So if I've got a project and I lack something, can I finish the project? No, can't finish it. You're getting ready to make a cake. You get started. You get all the dry things put together, and then you don't have any eggs. So now what? Can you do it without it? Well, you better go get some eggs. I've tried. You've probably tried too. I'm going to put a substitution here. Usually substitutions equal disaster. Just doesn't work out. You don't want to lack anything when you're starting a project, or it's not going to come out right. The last definition there, to leave, forsake, to be wanting or deficient, to fail, to be wanting. So if you don't want to have it, well, let me look at the word nothing before we finish this out. And that's the last word there, just above verse 5 there. It says, medes. It is used in connection with a noun, no or none, or absolutely no one, not one, no man, nothing. So this is someone who has nothing. So what are you lacking? Nothing. Okay? So if you have this patience, what are you lacking? Nothing. Now, is that me? Or is that God? So you see how important it is that we learn how to look back on our trials with joy, and that the quicker we do it, the more mature we are, and the less lacking we are, and the more complete we are. So this is a section of scripture that we're going to have to factor in. And the next time a bad thing happens, this is where we have to come back to. And this is what we have to think about. Because if we're not thinking about it like this, then we are going to be lacking, and we're going to be wanting, and we're not going to be perfect, and we're going to be at great danger. Because if Satan can see a weakness like that, what can he do? He can exploit it. He can exploit it. That's why we have to, I'm talking about this Sunday morning, we have to look, or excuse me, Sunday evening, about putting on the whole armor of God. We have to be looking at our temptations and our trials and our weaknesses, and finding out where these lacks are and filling them in and covering them and taking care of them and strengthening them before something happens where it's beyond our ability to handle. Jason, did you ring the bell twice? Oh, okay. All right then. Well, we'll pick up with verse 5 next week. Another verse for class. So I think it's worth it, personally. I think this is such a critical thing that we need to spend this kind of time on it. But so we'll pick up with verse 5 next week, and we'll finish up this section. And then, kind of like Romans, I think we'll be moving a lot quicker after we get through that section. So, thanks.